Chapter 12, March 1st, 2019, San Francisco, California. Ellie placed two Tupperware containers at Annika's door and knocked twice before zooming down the stairwell with the boys. The food was both a gift and a practical solution to the day's needs, a cream cheese sandwich and baby carrot sticks for Nathan, whom Annika was picking up from the Presidio that evening, and homemade brownies as a treat, for she knew Annika loved to have them with a cup of matcha tea. Thankfully, this evening she didn't have law clinic supervising duty, and she was glad because she could come home and try to relax. Things, as usual, were hectic. It was a huge relief to be back on speaking terms with Annika. That week after their trip to Olympoli, where they did not knock on each other's doors, text, or even pass on the stairwell, was one of the worst in Ellie's life, up there with the early divorce weeks where she and Joe were at a standoff. There was something so devastating about falling out with a female friend, as if she had been rejected by a higher power, an entity larger than life, as if nothing would ever feel right again. Neither had given in, but after the week of unbearable silence, Ellie ached for Annika so much that she'd taken a dish of roasted rosemary potatoes to leave at Annika's door with a soft knock and a simple note, "I'm sorry, can we still be friends?" Half an hour later, Annika had returned the knock on her door and walked right in. "I don't want to revisit it," admonished Annika solemnly, holding up her palm. "It's done. I'm sorry that we had such a horrible spat, but we're adults and, you know, we both miss each other. Besides, your rosemary potatoes are my kryptonite. Well played." Ellie had nodded, tears filling her eyes. "I don't know how it got so heated, but I don't ever want that to happen again," she uttered quietly. They had embraced, and Ellie felt such relief surge through her that she couldn't help but let the tears fall onto Annika's shoulders. "It's the Italian in me," Ellie murmured into her friend's shoulder. "Growing up surrounded by hotheads, yelling half in Italian, half in English, sometimes we just blow." Annika laughed. "Right. An angry Italian woman is no trifling matter," joked Annika. Ellie wiped her tears and held her friend at a distance. "Want to know the good thing about having a fiery Italian friend?" Annika shrugged. Ellie walked straight over to the kitchen and showed Annika the half bottle of Chianti she had hidden near the bread. "Italian wine." They both had laughed, and Ellie poured two large glasses, and they'd sat at the countertop and drank it and caught up on the few days they'd missed in each other's lives. The argument had changed them, Ellie suspected, but perhaps, as so often happened in the aftermath of an explosive argument, it would bring them closer. They both could see how easy it was for everything to fall away, and in that short time apart, it was clear how much they needed each other. Ellie had decided she simply wouldn't bring up Ben again, nor would she share her true feelings towards him. Annika just didn't want to hear it. For her part, she suspected Annika wasn't going to push on anything career-related. They were at a truce. From now on, no straying into wobbly, painful territory uninvited. They would have to find a new way to let off steam. No true friendship could survive from too much truth, at least not too often. But for the moment, they were back on friendly terms. At least they had each other. They needed each other, as they both struggled with their separate demons. Ellie certainly had hers. And Annika? Well, Ellie wondered, would Annika ever really be able to face up to hers? She did not know, and she wasn't qualified to know that. For a grief counselor, she was not. As Ellie pulled onto Highway 80 East, she double-checked the clock, 9:30 a.m., and saw the dashboard light up with the incoming call from Brad Foley. Finally, she had managed to get her phone paired to the Odyssey, and it was a relief to be able to talk business in the privacy of the car. Luca was almost always quiet in the car and calmed by the rhythm of the road. Something about her new client's case irked Ellie. She sensed that Hansa Nambortiri might not be sharing something with her, but quite what she didn't know. The woman seemed reluctant and scared. The more she thought about meeting the two sisters afterwards, she realized it was quite unusual for two unmarried women from India to leave their village and come to the U.S. the way they had done, albeit together and under such drastic circumstances. Still, she had gotten the ball rolling in the most essential and obvious vein, which was to file an application for benefits with the Workers' Compensation Appeals Board, and to contact opposing counsel for a list of insurance network treating physicians to keep Hansa's medical care moving without her worrying about more out-of-pocket expenses. She had checked the box on Hansa's application for an expanded serious and willful inquiry, and would follow up with an additional motion to the board and a discovery demand. It had only been 5 weeks since Ellie had filed Hanso's case with the Workers' Compensation Appeals Board, along with an exhaustive demand for discovery evidence. Opposing counsel had already requested a meet and confer by phone. Brad Foley was an experienced, apathetic attorney, the epitome of a company man, known for his tough negotiations on behalf of insurance companies, this time labor guardian for the dollar discount store. "Well, points for punctuality," muttered Ellie before she pressed answer, donning her imaginary saber, mask, and foil.
"Hi, Ellie," Brad began. "Thanks for making yourself available."
"Hi, Brad," Ellie replied. "I'm on the road, but can chat briefly." On guard, she thought. Brad got right to it.
"Look, you filed an aggressive claim and discovery demand. I've taken a look at the file and the initial medical treatment records. While I sympathize with your client's situation, we'll need to examine all of her medical records from India. How do we know the extent of her injuries is solely attributable to her slip and fall at the insured's job site? I understand she did agricultural labor in her country."
Ellie lunged. "Brad, first of all, she's a human being with a name, Hansa Namburtiri. Second, can we get serious? Medical records from India? She'd never been to a doctor in her life before her time in the U.S. Using that as a scapegoat to wear her down is just bad faith. Miss Namburtiri has provided photos of the back room showing not just multiple tripping hazards, but exposed electrical wires and insulation among the clutter, not to mention rodent droppings. This isn't just about a spill. It's about a consistently unsafe environment that management failed to address. If you're thinking this is your garden variety workers' compensation injury, you'll need to step up your game to defend against the serious and willful misconduct. Under the circumstances, I'm confident a judge will grant our discovery request for the insured's occupational safety protocols and training records, surveillance camera footage, and correspondence of the store manager."
Brad parried. "Your client's, Ms. Nambiti's, photos and allegations are concerning, Ellie, but they don't justify your extensive fishing expedition for corporate records, which also contain proprietary information you aren't entitled to know."
Ellie reposted. "It's Namburtiri, and I think what you don't want me to know is that, at a minimum, the safety records and protocols don't even exist, which is its own violation. But you know what? No need to respond to that. We have a hearing date set on the discovery issues, and we're comfortable moving forward with it." Ellie listened to Brad's pause.
"Ellie, the extent of discovery you're seeking, along with the natural pacing of a claim like this, can leave your client without resolution for another year or more. Does that serve her? What does she really need? Help me help you help her."
Ellie rolled her eyes at Brad's disingenuous magnanimity, and responded with a disrobement. You know, all these fencing terms are French. Where am I here? Ellie rolled her eyes. Okay, so now she's talking. "We're staring down the barrel of a total knee replacement, Brad, and you know it. And you also know that your client will be held responsible for additional damages on the S&W claim. Threatening us with a delay won't change that. We can wait." Another moment of silence lapsed, which Ellie let linger before hearing Brad sigh.
"Look, while we dispute the extent of the liability, we're open to discussing a reasonable settlement figure, along with a non-disclosure agreement and a global release of any other employment-related claims."
Ellie, surprised at Brad's change of engagement, pressed, "Feel free to make an offer that reflects the gravity of the situation, your client's oversight, and the impact on Ms. Namburtiri's life, Brad, which I will convey to her. In the meantime, we're keeping the discovery hearing on calendar."
Brad receded. "I'll get back to you, Ellie."
The call ended. They were already broaching settlement? And a global settlement? Ellie's spidey senses were tingling. That wasn't typical in an administrative injury claim. "Mama thinks Brad tipped his hand, honey bear," Ellie announced into the rearview mirror, glancing back at Luca. What were they afraid of? Despite his decoy threats of delay, Ellie now had the feeling it was Brad's client who was in a hurry to make this go away. Since the start of Hansa's case, Ellie sensed she was missing something, but just hadn't been able to pin it down. Yet. She was determined to get to the bottom of it before allowing Labor Guardian to scurry away with a discount dollar buyout. Ellie turned the piece of paper over in her hands. It had been tucked into the cover of the diary, right at the back and almost completely hidden. She pulled it out to find a yellowed, folded piece of copybook paper full of dashes, dots, and stars alongside the alphabet. How strange. On her lap was one of Teddy's journals sent by her mother. She dared not put it on the table in case it picked up a spill or a crumb. These pages were so precious to her, she felt as though she should be handling them with vellum gloves. Feeling a shadow hover above her, she looked up to see who had closed in on her space and caught her breath. Dr. Varma. "Is this seat taken?" he smiled. Clearly it wasn't. Ellie waved her hand in a be-my-guest gesture and felt a surge of adrenaline wash through her. She had taken extra care with her appearance today. Her hair was silky and blown dry using her big round brush, her makeup perfectly in place, and she was wearing her favorite form-fitting cream-colored cashmere mock turtleneck. Had she expected to see the doctor today? Nope. Had she hoped to? Yes. Goodness. Was she blushing? "No diary today?" asked Dr. Varma, still smiling. Ellie lifted the journal from her lap into view. "I just got a fresh batch. These seem to be from the 1870s onward. I have a stack. My mother found them in her basement." "You're kidding," he exclaimed. "Someone's whole life in your very hands." His teeth were perfectly straight and white as porcelain. His genuine modesty was not lost on Ellie. As a neurosurgeon, he held life in his hands on a regular basis. "Looks like it," Ellie grinned, "and I've just found this." She'd been looking forward to reading the journal, but this dreamy doctor was just so damn distracting. She didn't close the diary, but she knew reading time was up. Dr. Varma examined the piece of paper in her hands. "A code?" he asked. Ellie shrugged with a coquettish smile. "Maybe," thought Ellie, feeling doubly excited now. "You've been keeping well," Dr. Varma said. "Was it a question?" "Very well, thank you," smiled Ellie again. Very well, if very well meant being crippled with mom guilt, facing the pressing reality that she couldn't do any of her jobs to the best of her known ability, not as a parent, not as a lawyer, not as a mentor, not even as a friend. Treading water is more like it, but hey, no need to scare this beautiful man away. "Your son's session going better today?" he asked. "Luca." "So far," shrugged Ellie. "No calls yet." "Do you live nearby?" he asked. "No, we live in San Francisco." "Oh, so a drive." "Yep." "Oh, that's a typo I have to fix." "Oh, small talk. Who are you?" she wanted to ask. "Who are you really inside, and why am I so frigging attracted to you?" Was it his aura, or did he have some subtle pheromonic scent that was wafting its way across the table? She longed to lean in and sniff his neck, his body, feel his stubble against her skin. There had been no one since Joe, and for a long time, even married to Joe, they had not been intimate. But now, well, now. "What are you, do you have?" They both spoke at the same time, stopped, and laughed. "You go first," he said kindly, waving his hand over his espresso. "No, you," said Ellie. She wanted to climb inside this intoxicating man's head, for starters. "I was just wondering," said Dr. Varma, "do you have a picture of this woman whose life you are reading? I mean, does she look like you?" Ellie shook her head. "No, I haven't seen one, but I do wonder all the time. What does she look like? Is there a family resemblance? You know?" "It would be interesting to see," smiled Dr. Varma as he lifted the tiny coffee cup to his lips. "Where the beauty came from." He looked directly into her face. Ellie felt stunned in her tracks. Beauty. He thought she was beautiful. That's what he meant, right? Right? "I," gulped Ellie. And then she giggled, like a schoolgirl. "Darn it, crow up, Ellie." "I don't normally do this, but I only have a few minutes, and I've been looking out for you, actually, and I'm not scheduled to work the next few Thursdays, so I might miss you." Ellie's face remained blank, trying to decode the doctor's words. "I would love to talk to you more, outside of here, about this diary, about your family, about you." "Oh," said Ellie quietly, totally and utterly thrown. "Would you be interested in that? Meeting up? Maybe a proper coffee? Or a drink? I don't drink, but, you know, somewhere nice, somewhere not..." He waved his hands around him. "A hospital environment." "Would she? Hell yes!" "Sure," she said, as nonchalantly as she could. "That would be nice." "Great," he said, and reached into his pocket for his cell phone. "Give me your number and I'll text you. You'll have my number then, and we can go from there." Ellie called out the digits while something surged through her body, something more than adrenaline. Lust? Exaltation? Joy? Dr. Varma dialed her number and she felt her cell vibrate in her bag against her hip.
"Lucky your son is not my patient," he said as he got up to leave. "Otherwise, this would not be allowed."
Lucky indeed. Ellie waved the doctor goodbye and rubbed the soft cover of the diary in her lap. A date. She had a date. Now, how is she going to fit that into her life, too? Ellie was in a terrific mood as she pulled out of UC Davis. Luca was tired, and she watched his eyes droop in the rearview mirror. Soon he would drift off to sleep. When her phone rang loudly just a few minutes later, she answered it straight away and double-checked Luca in the back. Still asleep. Sheesh. Ellie Benvenuto! Oh, whoops, no, that's a whisper. Hold on, let's try that again. Ellie Benvenuto, Ellie whispered towards the car console, hoping her voice was still loud enough to sound professional. Ellie, said a bright voice, louder than her own. Ellie winced. Ruby Martinez. Ruby, goodness. You've been on my mind. Your office gave me your cell number. I hope you don't mind the unscheduled call.
Not at all, Ellie toned back, raising her voice now. If it woke Luca, so be it.
Oh, did I just stop my... Oh, no, we're still going. I thought I stopped the recording, but we're still going. If it woke Luca, so be it. She needed to be professional in a conversation with this woman she so admired. I can't get our recent conversation out of my mind, said Ruby. What you were telling me about your former employer, I feel there's a lot there under the surface, just waiting to be scratched. I told you we're about to present a roster of cases to the EEOC, and, you know, something tells me that maybe your case, what happened to you, well, it needs to be included.
Ellie sucked in a breath.
And before you worry about giving anything away, I know who your former employer was. Let me tell you, Ellie, it's not the first time Hutton and Fetterer has come to my attention.
The name sent a cold wave of dread through Ellie. Even the mere mention of the firm could bring on palpitations these days. It was most unsettling, the fact they still had such a hold over her. Of course, thought Ellie, the name of her former employer naturally was on her LinkedIn account. It wasn't exactly difficult information to sleuth out.
I understand your hesitation in going up against such a formidable foe, but from what I know of you and your character, with your experience and from what you told me, you have a case on your hands here.
Ruby, said Ellie firmly, taking another deep breath, summoning the power to discuss this issue that made her stomach sick. I worked in litigation. It's not just the belly of the beast, it's the lower intestines. It upends lives. I can't have that kind of destabilization with everything I've got on my plate, with what I've already been through this past year. I just don't think I'm in a position to...
I get it, interrupted Ruby. Lawsuits are the worst possible vehicle for social change. Except for nothing, and that's what we have right now. That's where we are right now. It took more than a decade to pass the Family Medical Leave Act, and it's very limited. So when people say, well, the lawsuits are limited achievements, I say, well, compared to what? We're not in Europe. In the United States today, working parents receive supports and benefits that in much of the developed world would be considered scandalously ungenerous.
Ellie marveled at Ruby's dauntless determination and wished for a healthy chunk of her metal. This woman was a force of nature, her gale wind leaving nowhere for the faint of mind to seek shelter.
I hear you, Ruby, but is it also possible that they were right about me? I mean, maybe I just wasn't going to be able to do the job anymore?
Silence. Ruby, are you there?
I'm here, said Ruby, her voice grave now. It just pains me to hear a woman like you driven to make a statement like that. Truly. You are exactly the right person at the right time to make a difference. You must believe me on that one.
Ellie listened, trying to take in Ruby's words.
Why don't we meet? Asked Ruby breezily.
Sure, okay, agreed Ellie, knowing this would buy her some time to think.
I know you'll do the right thing, said Ruby. We'll help you every step of the way.
Huh, sounded like Ruby was really counting on Ellie, but she wasn't quite on board.
After Ruby hung up, Ellie drove along, her mind a whir, the highway eating up all her thoughts. She felt as though she were in a daze. What a day. A date and a meeting with one of her all-time legal heroes? Things may be looking up.